You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hi, my name is Tanya Pinkins, and I'm the host of the podcast You Can't Say That on the Broadway Podcast Network. This fall, I have a special treat for you. In honor of my debut feature film, Red Pill, Marissa Lynn Daniels Studio has been hosting weekly conversations with my fellow Broadway colleagues and co-host Sierra Renee about the red pilling of America. These conversations create a safe space for us to talk about the things that are on our mind with an election and a global pandemic. So join us for The Red Pilling of America, a spotlight series, every Saturday at 5 p.m. or on the Broadway Podcast Network, You Can't Say That, bpn.fm/YCST. Join the conversation.
Obviously, I don't think she makes it, or that's my assumption. But she's like, I think I'm going to go. This doesn't feel right, right? And then there's another quote, which I think it was maybe by Ruben, and he says, I'm going to call the sheriff, right? Which is like, I probably wouldn't call the police. Like, not necessarily. Like, maybe... but probably not, especially in a place where I don't feel already comfortable by, like, the inhabitants, right? So, like, even just in that, like, seeing the responses to what's going on in the movie through these different lenses based on, you know, their demographics and who they are racially, you know, identity and such, I think it's really fascinating.
Discovering that instinct is really important too, which is what I think us as Black people face on a day-to-day basis, is having an instinct of, is this safe? Can I stay here? Do I need to leave this situation right now? And I love that that was represented so well just in the trailer, and you feeling and that vibe in the movie, which I think is something that paralleled really beautifully with Get Out. And, you know, you were talking, Tanya, about Get Out being a horror film, and I kind of think, I kind of think of it as like a thriller, but there's a fine line between the two. And would you consider Red Pill to be horror, thriller, both? Where would you sort of categorize it?
My daughter would say it's not a horror film because there's just not enough blood and kills. But my daughter, when we watch horrors together, she's happy if people are being chased by something and screaming, which I could care less. Being chased by something and screaming and then people get killed, I don't care. I want to have something that I'm trying to figure out. Or like, how's it? I want to be trying to figure out what's going to happen. I need at least that. I mean, like I said, horror to me, you know what the monster is. You may not see the monster. You know the monster is probably going to win. But what is there some reason or some motivation, or is there something that they're going to try to do to stop the monster? Like a shark, Jaws was fantastic, but it wasn't that the shark was the scary thing. The people's response to the shark was the scary thing. And so for me, in a sense, Red Pill is kind of like that. It's definitely about how people don't listen to the Black woman's instinct. And how we as, quote, on the left, just keep thinking that everybody's on our side and we're going to win because we're the majority. I mean, that's literally like a line in the movie. And I want to say that I just learned this fact in the past week, and I keep repeating it everywhere I go, that no Democratic president has won the majority of the white vote since Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act.
Wow.
Right.
So I feel like for people who are white, who are thinking their friends are on their side, I think that they mostly think of the people who are rabidly talking about Republicans and MAGA. There's a whole bunch of quiet ones who are saying nothing, and they're still not voting the way you vote. And because it's more than 50%. It's something like 56% of white people vote Republican, like that no Democrat has ever had. And so it's actually in their hands to decide if we're going to have a democracy.
Right. But then it always comes down to the question of, what do they get out of democracy, and what do they get out of stifling democracy, right?
Well, like Isabel Wilkerson, who wrote The Warmth of Other Suns and won the Pulitzer, her new book, Cast, one of the sections, she talks about how what the current president, occupant of the White House, offers is a return to white sovereignty. And so where politicians seem to think that you know, people in, quote, red states are voting against their interests, they are actually not voting against their interests, because they're saying, I will take a short-term loss for the interest of maintaining white sovereignty over the long haul. That is their number one priority.
Do you feel like you explore the theme?
Come on, second, Lily, what do y'all think?
It all in.
Well,
what's your question, Sarah?
I was just gonna say, do you because Chuck and Lindley and I were actually talking about like the fear of like white genocide, right? Like this like kind of made up mythical fear that people of color are out to destroy white people, right? And which is like the base, which people say is like the basis for the foundation of a lot of the like the racism and biases, prejudice, whatever we're dealing with. So like,
and there is the fact that melanin is the dominant gene.
Right. Right. So like maybe it's even like inbred in us a little bit, you know, or in them, or, you know, whatever, like what is it actually? Is it societal? Is it mythology? Is it, you know, actually a part of our biology that it's we want to, of course. That.
It's tribal, it's animal, it's, we're animals. Okay. People just forget that we're fucking animals. Okay.
We're animals.
We eat, we fuck, we sleep. And that's what animals do.
Procreate.
Animals try to procreate and make sure that their shit, make sure they have their shit. And if they don't have their shit, they'll go and take someone else's shit. And that's
go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
And that is where we are. And we'll always be. Because that's just how it is. And so the nuance of that in terms of governments and societies is that those in power want do everything they can to keep it, and will not, and very reluctantly give it up. It had to be wrenched from their cold, bloody hands. That's just how it is.
I want to go back to you saying about eating and fucking. I was reading a book called The Evolution, Woman's Evolution, and she has this theory that she posits in a big, long book to explain it, that she does not believe there is an incest taboo. She thinks that's a modern day invention. And her theory of that is that, you know, pre-Columbian, Paleolithic, Neolithic man did not know anything about DNA. So how could they have a taboo incest, prohibition about that? But when they look at, you know, when they've been able to interview tribes that are still living closer to the land and sort of hunter-gatherer tribes, what they found is what they did have is that fully 75% of the women in their tribe were off limits to most of the men in the tribe on pain of death. Okay. So since they don't know anything about genetics, you know, what could make them say these people are off limits? You don't do that to them. And her theory is that what the primitive species of humans did recognize is two very fierce hungers, the hunger for food and the hunger for sex. And whenever they interviewed these tribes, they found that when they talked about themselves, they described themselves as man. Everybody else was an animal. So you could have sex and eat people from other tribes.
Oh, whoa.
It didn't do it to your own because you all were man. Whoa. They were animals.
Oh, wow.
And so I feel like we kind of have that happening right now where there's people who feel like we're the humans and the rest of you all are not. And we can do anything we want to you because we're the only man.
Right, right.
But of course, there isn't any, like, even scientific basis for the separations that we've created societally, right? Like, culturally and society, like, just the fact that some people were on this continent versus this continent, like, literally, there aren't, we're all so much more genetically similar than we are disparate. Absolutely. So that's the thing that always is so infuriating about it, you know?
White was invented not 100 years ago. I mean, white is real new.
Jefferson
asked for it. It's like, you know, somebody said, you know what? Let's make some of us white. Mm-hmm. And then we can consolidate our power. And we'll make these rules that, you know, favor us. And if you're not white, you're fucked.
Right. Well, and Noel Inaktiev, who just recently passed, he talked about, I think it was called anti-whiteness or anti the concept of whiteness, because he's like, it's not real and it doesn't exist. And his proof of that was that in the olden days, you know, Irish people were not considered white until the Irish were collaborating with Black folk who were moving to the cities, right? And they were saying, hey, we're coming together, we're all going to have live together, and then we'll be more than the people who are oppressing us or not allowing us to have what we want. And so the people who were oppressing all white people in America, they were saying, hey, Irish people, actually, you look like us enough. So you are actually also white too now. We're going to stop treating you like crap. We're going to stop putting out signs and saying, you know, no potatoes and no, you know, whatever they said to people back then.
Remember, but there's that thing about the race. Capitalism is the cause of all of this.
Right.
Because capitalism racialized people. It didn't racialize people in terms of their melanin, but it racialized people. That's what allowed the Brits to starve 6 million Irish people. They dehumanized them.
Right.
You know, they just were like, you aren't like us for the sake of how we can use you. And people forget that capital requires labor. Labor makes capital.
Right.
And so, but labor never gets the benefits of their capital. So the people at the top racialize any group of people to say, you are the mud sill. You are the bottom of this society on which all of the rest of it is built. And we need somebody at the bottom so we can build our castles to the top.
Absolutely.
Just like termites.
Of human nature and animal nature to create hierarchy in any way, right? Create levels that can allow one group to feel more important and powerful, which means another group has to feel less important and less powerful. Mm-hmm. And the easiest thing is to say, you don't look like me, so you're lesser than. And then, but once let's say the Irish people were like, wait a minute, we can be a part of the white group. Cool. All about it. That's great. We're white now.
And there's also something universal. Let's not forget about every tribe needing a nigger. The nigger is a very convenient word and places people in a specific light. And everybody, every group of people, generally speaking, it needs a nigger.
The Dalit people of India, that's what their place is. They're the bottom of the caste. Hmm. And, you know, one of the things Wilkerson talks about in Germany is once they made the Jews the bottom, and once they had, you know, killed off so many Jews, or the Jews had run away, then the Germans started turning on one another and looking at people who had brown hair or brown eyes and going, where did you, what's your ancestry? Can you be sure?
It's all about our lack. We haven't, the evolution of our societal habits and mores and rules and whatnot are way, way, way unevolved to what is possible in our hearts and what is possible in our higher aspect. Mm-hmm. Some people, we know about it, we feel it, but it's unachievable with the tools that we have. And using the path that we have chosen to take, it's just, we can't get there from here. It's like Einstein said, you can't solve tomorrow's problems with today's tools. You got to come up with better ways. First of all, we have to teach empathy. If we don't begin to understand the importance of teaching empathy, it's a waste of fucking time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that is the key to unlock potential and to end suffering and all these things that plague us. It's all about empathy and love. And you know, it sounds woo-woo to say it, but it's the goddamn truth.
There's science.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I didn't answer your questions here because you asked me about why this thing. So I feel like I'm really good at empathy. Mm. I have friends from every walk of life, and the movie's called Red Pill because I went deep into Red Pill communities. Unbeknownst to me, I had a red pill therapist. You know, people know red pill from the Matrix, but red pill has a whole, like, there's the red pill women and the red pill men and the red pill communities and red pilling somebody. And I spent a lot of time inside those subreddits. And as I said, I had a therapist who was doing that. So I feel like, I hope that I told this story from a perspective of empathy for both sides. Mm-hmm. I don't make a judgment in the storytelling. Mm-hmm. I just show you how I think it plays out in the mm-hmm. world in this story. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that I don't paint anybody as a bad person. Of course, depending on your perspective, you're going to pick one. But I don't think I, as the storyteller, do really. you know.
Which I always find those kinds of pieces to be, like, whether it's movies or theater or just books, it doesn't matter. Those are the ones that always interest me the most, because then it leaves me with all this self-reflection of like, wait, I chose this. Why did I choose this? Or why did I think that this character was like the one that I associated with the most versus this one? Or, you know, especially when you get to hear the creator say like, oh no, I'm just showing you what's here. And you made that judgment. And then you're like, oh, what does that say about me? Which I think that's the best kind of stuff, right? It's holding up the mirror. That's the job that we're all hopefully doing is, hey, this is a part of humanity. Look at it. What's it mean to you? How's it make you feel? What are you going to do about it? Right. You know,
self-reflection and curiosity are perhaps the two most important tools for evolution, for personal evolution.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most frightening things about 45 is not only has racism and bigot nature, is lack of empathy. And I think mm-hmm. having a of the free country being lacking in any form of empathy whatsoever is one of the things that truly scares me the most.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead.
What scares me the most is how... you know, I love it that we've had 100 consecutive days of uprisings in the country and they're getting no press at all. And 93% of them have been peaceful. But still, when I talk to some of my friends, it's not on their, it's not in their newsfeed. Like the things that are getting me upset all the time, they don't even know that it's going on. And I just finished watching The Social Dilemma, which is a new documentary on Netflix. And it's talking about how the algorithm is designed in such a way that it just wants to make money. So it yep. needs more people to do something. So the algorithm has actually been growing these red pill communities.
Yes.
It's been growing them by saying, well, maybe these kind of people would like this. And so it's inviting people into these radical communities and saying, well, let's put the anti-vaxxers and the QAnons and the this and let's see. And it's just because it's trying to spread its web out to make more money for third parties that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. It has made these communities bigger than they could have ever been had the technology not existed.
100%.
Bit more about red pill communities. Like my initial understanding of red pill is like what you said is from the Matrix. And I've done a little bit of research into sort of, you know, the underpinnings of all the different meanings and worlds that it encompasses. But can you speak a little bit more about red pill communities?
Sure. So if you like were to go into a subreddit for the red pill women, they are women who in their home life, they have to be submissive. There's a set of rules that they have to follow, that the man is the dominant person and they have to submit to his rule, etc. The red pill men are competing, conquering, controlling, aggressive, that's an aspect of red pill communities. Then if you go into the manosphere, there's like so many different variations of what that looks like. Now, red pilling has meant anything from like white supremacist or KKK people getting a job in a community and over time getting rid of everybody in that community so that everybody in there is like them. I mean, like there's a slogan, police and KKK, you know, all the way. These groups have infiltrated the highest levels of our authority in our country so that they are running things. And we see it with the gentleman in Washington that was executed by the federal government. They executed somebody. So, you know, we're talking about the red pilling of America. So much of our authority in the United States I'm going to back up. Because Lincoln chose to let Robert Lee go home with, quote, dignity. And because most of America was not for freeing the slaves, they were for keeping the Union together. The South rising, the South has been slowly rising again forever, ever since the end of Reconstruction. So they've been waiting for this moment, and the signs and the prophecies, it's all there. You know, in those communities, the current occupant of the White House is called King Cyrus. We're going to have a new time period, the time before 45 and the time after 45. So as we see all this climate change and, you know, tornadoes and typhoons, this for the Dominionists and the Evangelicals, this is biblical prophecy. This is not something they want to stop. This is the coming of the Messiah. This is, you know, this is supposed to be like this.
Wow. Yeah. That's what they believe.
Yeah. Which is really tough to dismantle. I mean, just seeing the comments all over Instagram and Twitter, and you know,
what's needed in America is gene splicing, okay? Because racism is in the DNA of America. And so we gotta find out which X, which Y, and which Q is in that double helix that is racism, and expunge it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the lines of the movie, it's one of my favorite lines of the movie, is Ruben Blades says, and this is a fact, that the Haitian Revolution is the one successful enslaved uprising that they won. And so what Ruben says is when the Haitian people created their constitution, the Constitution of Haiti says that you must renounce whiteness in order to be a citizen. Wow. Didn't have anything to do with the color of your skin, but you did not have identity as white in order to be a citizen of Haiti. And then the white character says, and Mother Nature's been punishing them ever since.
Mother Nature and all the other countries, all the other European countries, and us.
So it is
when they had that revolution, the Americans came down on them, the French came down on them, the world came down on them.
So it's this identity politics that's just a little over 200 years old that is what the red pilling is, that whiteness is a form of property in these United States. It is a property. It's a card that entitles you to not wear a mask. It entitles you to do what you want to do. It entitles you to kill people. It entitles you to call the police to terrorize people. Once you get that card, you get a set of rights, and people don't want to give those rights up.
It's your social.
And the Irish and the Italian were invited in because actually the Communist Party came in and organized the sharecroppers and the poor whites. And because they were the majority and they were going to take over, it was like, oh, you know what? We're going to give you access to the white card. Mm-hmm. So now you can be above these people that you were joining with, because now we're going to give you access to those privileges.
Right.
So it is something that is used to divide and conquer people, even who have the same interests. The value that's placed on the white card is so great that people will often vote against what we think is their immediate interest because that card carries such a high value.
Right. It's a card and a weapon, right?
Yes. Class and wealth comes into play there too, because you can have the white card, but you could be lacking the class and wealth card, but you still think that vote is for you when it's not. It's for the rich white people. But because you have the white card, you think that is the best choice to go for when
you're in the club.
Why? Because you're just temporarily poor.
Yeah.
You're eventually, you know, there were two Supreme Court cases that happened with a South Asian man who his country is very close to the Caucasus Mountains. And so he said, I can actually claim direct ancestry from the Caucasians, and a Japanese man who had extremely fair skin. And they both took separate cases to the Supreme Court to say, we should be entitled to this white card. And the Supreme Court said, no, everybody knows Asian Oriental people are not white. And everybody knows South Asian people aren't white.
Man, I guess like, you know, if like being a card carrying member of a group is like really one of our strongest desires, like we need to make like the liberal group like more fun.
We need
jackets. We need like cool fonts on our cards. Like what?
The distinction I always find interesting, at least this to me, is that the left has something that the right does not have. And that is humor.
Sense of humor. Yep.
The left can be funny and in a lot of different ways. The right, they don't really have humor.
But do you think that they think that they have humor?
Reagan was funny sometimes, but you know, basically they're nerds.
Have you seen it?
They have humor. They think they have humor.
They think they do. That's what I'm saying. Because the Reddit things that I've seen, the scary Reddits I've been on, I feel like they really do believe, like, ha ha ha, shooting this guy. Ha ha, that's hilarious. Yeah, the way that you teabagged him. You know what I mean? Like, what? Like that's
their humor.
Let me say this. They lack wit.
There we go.
But they would say that about leftists.
I know. It'll always be the projection game, right? It's just like, which is exactly what Trump does, which is like the narcissism, borderline personality bull crap that he does, which is projecting all of his own things onto someone else. And as long as you do that, you are in some way creating like a little bit of a barrier of like, well, you got all these problems to fix. Don't come after me, you know, even though they're all actually your problems.
Well, but we got to work together because democracy is based on the consent of the loser. And what we don't have anymore right in this moment in time is we will not get the consent of the, quote, minority in America right now.
Right.
And that is why our democracy is going to fall. It is going to. You know, the Civil War, they talk about Fort Sumter as being the first place the shots were fired. But skirmishes had been going on for years before that day. And we are in the midst of the Second Civil War right now.
Oof. Lily, what do you think about that?
I was interested in what Papa was going to say. You were very animated about something.
I submit to you this, that this polarization that you see in society and in the world is the polarization of humankind, humankind and human mind. And I submit that those on one side are one half of that humankind brain, and those on the other side are the other half of that humankind brain. And it is a hive mind, if you will, seemingly at odds with one another, just as yin and yang seem to be at odds with one another. Each side contains a little bit of the other one, just like yin and yang. And so, yes, what we are witnessing in the minutia is suffering, is conflict, is all of that. But in the larger picture, we are watching something evolve.
Agreed.
I'm Tanya Pinkins, and you're listening to You Can't Say That, this week's Spotlight with Sierra Renee and myself. That was part one of our conversation with Chuck and Lily Cooper. Come back for part two and join us for other episodes of Spotlight. We'll be speaking with Paul Oakley Stovall and Nick Walker.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.